Blog Talk Radio.
From Lives in the Balance, the nonprofit organization committed to advocating on behalf of behaviorally challenging kids and their caregivers, this is Dr. Ross Green. Welcome to Collaborative Problem Solving at Home. I'm delighted that you were able to join in. This program airs live each Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time during the school year. We explore a variety of topics aimed at helping you better understand and help your challenging child and implement the collaborative problem-solving approach at home. If you have a question or comment, call 347-994-2981. If you call in, you'll be muted until I bring you on the air. And now, let's talk about your challenging child and what we can do to help you make things better. Hey there, and welcome to today's program. Delighted that you are taking the time out to listen in and maybe learn, maybe ask some questions. You want that call-in number again? 347-994-2981. Maybe get the support you need. Maybe feel a little bit better about your challenging kid and your relationship with your challenging kid and the possibility that we might be able to make things better. That's why we do this once a week at 11 a.m. Eastern Time every Tuesday, because it's not so easy parenting a behaviorally challenging kid, not so easy having a behaviorally challenging kid in your household. It's scary, it's frustrating, it's not what most folks thought they were getting themselves into, and the good news is it can get better. What makes it better? Well, understanding why your challenging kid is challenging in the first place. That goes a long way. And figuring out what skills your child is lacking so you have the right lenses on, and figuring out what unsolved problems are reliably and predictably setting in motion challenging episodes so you know what you're working on, and then solving those problems collaboratively instead of unilaterally. When you solve problems with your child unilaterally, they don't get upset about the way you're solving the problem like solving them unilaterally causes, and the problems get solved durably, and they learn the skills that were setting in motion the challenging episodes in the first place. We have an email about that today, so I'm going to get to that email, but we do have a caller already. Callers take priority, so caller, hang in there for just a second while I finish this sentence. When you solve problems collaboratively, your relationship with your kid improves because they feel heard. They feel like their concerns have been legitimized instead of blown off the table. Your concerns get heard, and y'all work together on solving problems. It's collaborative. It's not adversarial. It's not enemies. It's problem solving together. So that's the whole goal of this program. Let's make things better if we can. That's the whole goal of collaborative problem solving, and that's the whole goal of Lives in the Balance, which provides all kinds of free resources on the collaborative problem-solving approach. Cool, eh? But I'm going to take our first phone call of the day. We'll get to email later if depends on how many people call. But here's our first caller of the day. Caller, you're on from Area 60, code 613. How you doing today?
Fine, thanks.
Good. What you got on your mind?
Well, I've read your stuff, and I find it very compelling. I certainly have a child for whom, you know, the usual methods, you know, don't usually work. But on the other hand, I'm afraid collaborative problem solving doesn't really seem to be working either, mostly because I would say he simply won't engage. You know, I think one of his lagging skills is, you know, his, you know, lack of ability to, you know, sort of see that there's an issue in his life that needs to be addressed. He's almost 17 now, so this has been going on for quite a long time. And our understanding, my husband and I, is, you know, we've sort of been through the wards with this for a number of years now. We see it sort of as what we see as a sort of vicious triangle, where on the one hand, he's very smart. He's been tested and is in the sort of higher end of the gifted range. But he also lacks some really foundational skills, both in terms of things like, you know, organization and social skills and that sort of thing. But I think his other abilities mask that, you know, so he sort of cruised through elementary school, you know, without ever, you know, developing any of those skills, but also the fact that they were lagging, not really being noticed. And at the same time, instinctively, he's pretty oppositional. Like, he's very inclined to question authority. If he doesn't see the purpose of something, he won't do it. He sees the world in a very black and white way. And I don't doubt that he feels a lot of anxiety about his situation right now. He's nearly 17. He's, you know, not passed a course in high school for the past three semesters and is heading that way again this semester. But he just walks away when you try to have any kind of conversation with him, however sort of empathic you try to be. He pretty much stays up all night, sleeps all day. When he's awake, he parks himself in front of a TV screen or computer screen or something. We've been hoping for a sort of incremental improvement, but he's getting older and it doesn't seem to be happening. So, you know, it's making us pretty sick to watch this go on and feeling like, you know, we just sort of can't keep living like this, but not knowing, you know, what to do with somebody who just won't engage.
Well, that's quite a handful you've described, and I get that you're extremely concerned about your son. How much help I'll be able to give you on a radio program, we're about to find out. How come he won't talk to you?
I think he feels, I think he's aware of the hole that he's in and is just so overwhelmed by it that he doesn't kind of want to open the Pandora's box. Because we've been over backwards. Sorry?
Does he talk to you about any, don't engage about anything?
Yeah, he will engage about things. We try to engage with him. You know, we feel that, you know, there's not a lot of positive stuff in his life and we don't want our relationship with him to be another source of stress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll talk to him about, you know, sports or try to watch movies with him that, you know, he would, you know, he finds engaging. And, you know, we try to connect with him. But then whenever the conversation turns to, you know, so what's up about school, occasionally he'll talk a bit about it and show a bit of self-awareness, but it just never goes anywhere.
So when he is able to give you some information about it, what are you hearing?
What we're hearing is basically, I just can't get up in the morning. And we've said, you know, well, if that really doesn't work for you, there are other alternative schools that have different schedules, or there's online courses. We're not insisting you go to a school that starts at 8:30 in the morning. In all honesty, I think the I just can't get up in the morning is, you know, kind of a cop-out, though.
Well, we're going to take it at face value, even though we may think it's a cop-out. I think it works better for us to take that. I've worked with enough kids for whom getting up in the morning was excruciatingly difficult to be disinclined to refer to it as a cop-out, but in collaborative problem-solving, we're going to take the kid's concern at face value, but we're going to also try to learn more about it. The fact that he says he's having trouble getting up in the morning could be many different things. Does he ever tell you why he's having trouble getting up in the morning?
Well, he often doesn't go to bed until 3, 4, 5 o'clock, so it's, you know, pretty obvious why he has trouble getting up.
Why he's having trouble getting up in the morning, yes. So he's staying up late,
mm-hmm.
sleeping late, not going to school at all.
Maybe a day or two a week.
A day or two a week. When he's at school, or is he doing any work, or is he just hanging?
Well, there was a bit of a change at the beginning of the semester. You know, he is 16 now, so we had told him in August, look, you know, you don't have to go back to school. You have other choices. You could go to a different, you know, type of program. But he said he wanted to go back to the regular school that he had been attending. So that was his choice, and he has been much more agreeable in the last few months. So I think partly because he can't sort of claim that anybody's, you know, quote, forcing him you know, to do something he doesn't want to do. This was, you know, his choice, at least at face value.
Right.
And when he has been going to school, he has not been a behavioral problem the way he was in the past. And earlier in the semester, he did make a bit of effort to keep up with assignments and so on, but that's pretty much, you know, fallen off the radar.
So what you're basically describing is a kid who is in a deep hole.
I think so.
And the big question that I have, I mean, I've got gazillion questions, some of which I don't know that we'd be able to get answers to from anybody but him. But it sounds like he's been in that he's been sliding down that hole for quite a long time. My big question is, though, do you think that the current setup of things, let's pretend that he wasn't staying up till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Let's pretend he was getting up in the morning to go to school. Let's pretend he was going to school. But let's say that getting to school wasn't an issue. Do you think that if he was getting to school, the current setup of things at school is sufficient to pulling him out of the hole, given whatever we know about why he slid into that hole in the first place? Because from what I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, he's staying up really late and not showing up at school because he can't get up in the morning, is a relatively recent development. And we could think of that possibly, I could be wrong, as a byproduct of being in the hole. I mean, if you're in the, if you're in the hole at school...
Yeah, it's not really a very recent development. It's been going on for about the last couple of years.
So for the last 2 years, he's been having trouble getting to school.
Yes. His attendance for the last 2 years has been, you know, sporadic at best.
Got it. So we've got a 2-year pattern of him having trouble getting there and not getting a whole lot out of it?
That's right.
Describe what we had before that.
What we had before that was somebody who was going to school, was frequently ejected from the classroom because of acting up while he was there, but who was able to sort of pull off passing his courses with a very minimal amount of effort, and partly because before high school, you know, there's a big social promotion thing where, you know, they, you know, often don't fail kids even if they haven't made the grade kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But all of that sort of caught up with him when he got to high school, and, you know, it's more of a, you know, if you just don't show up for the exam, which he doesn't do, you just don't pass the course. You know, there's no sort of safety net.
And any theories... Is the main theory about why he's not, why things have taken a turn for the worse during the last 2 years, is because they're no longer passing him just because he's passing tests, that there's more to it than that? What's our leading theory on how we went from passing but not necessarily putting in a great deal of effort to pass, and not passing at all, and now not showing up? What factors do you think took us from what was not an ideal scenario to an even less ideal scenario?
Well, my own personal theory is that really school was always a terrible fit for him. Like, he was, you know, he was very bright and reading and writing well from, you know, long before he started school, and he found it deadly to be there from an academic point of view. But in elementary school, he was sort of socially happy enough and, you know, just sort of, you know, happy enough to go just for, you know, the other stuff that was going on, sports and what have you, that, you know, that sort of tipped the balance, as it were. But through that whole time, because that was going on, he was just not remotely developing any, you know, skills of, you know, self-regulation or organization or what have you. But that was kind of masked because of his other abilities. I mean, he did very well, in fact, in elementary school. And like other kids in his class, their parents would be saying, oh, wow, this teacher gives a ton of homework, eh? And I'd be like, geez, I've never seen any homework. He never does a lick of homework, but he'd still be getting not just passing, but really good marks.
Wow.
But then that all sort of caught up with him when he got to be, you know, sort of 12, 13. It caught up with him in a big way, plus at an age when, you know, I think most kids are starting to sort of test their autonomy and, you know, at an age where he was sort of more inclined to start pushing limits. That's my personal theory.
Mm-hmm. And we would need, I think it's a good theory, but I think most theories are good theories, but the best theories are the ones that we, that really are verified by the kid in terms of what's going on and what's getting in his way. But there's, you know, I think it's a good theory. Where it leaves you is in the position of needing to gather some more information from him about what's going on with him, but he's not talking much, and trying to find an environment for him. Well, better yet, before I jump the gun on solutions, which I always hate to do, once we were to find out what is getting in his way, trying to figure out whether the current setup has even the remotest chance of fixing it, and given what you're saying, my bet is that the answer would be no. And if the current setup doesn't have the remotest chance of fixing what we don't know enough about yet to know what we're trying to fix, what would be a better arrangement for him? But I'm only talking in generic terms because I'm missing a crucial informant here, and so are you, him.
And if you ask him, as many people have, you know, sort of, well, you know, what is it? What is the problem? You know, he will say, you know, he doesn't know. And he'll say, you know, people ask me this all the time and I don't know. So, and I don't doubt that, you know, there is a lot of anxiety and confusion going on in his head. But he won't even sort of take the first step to, you know, try to do anything about it.
So tell me about your prior efforts, and we do have another caller, so we probably can't use the whole program on this, even though I would like to. Tell me about people who've talked to him and your efforts, aside from you, to other people's efforts to try to gather information from him.
Have
you seen clinicians? Have you?
Well, my husband and I have seen clinicians about him. He won't go. He did go once sort of under duress, but since it was under duress, I don't think it was, you know, likely to achieve much anyway. So, I mean, we have sought advice about him, but again, as of, you know, as of our conversation here as well, if he won't be part of that conversation, it's, you know, pretty limited how far you can go with that. You know, the, you know, school guidance counselors, you know, even the psychologist, social worker, what have you. I mean, I know their resources are stretched pretty thin, so I don't expect that they'd have a huge amount to be able to devote to any one kid. Having said that, they seem to be, you know, pretty narrow and limited in their, you know, sort of range and what they're prepared to contemplate. I mean, I think they just think that he's a, you know, just a strong-willed kid who just needs to, you know, learn his lesson the hard way.
Well, he's learning his lesson the hard way, and he's going to school less and less, which coincides with my usual experience of people trying to get kids to learn things the hard way over time. I'm convinced he's learned. If he doesn't go to school, he won't pass, but it sounds to me like he's slipping deeper and deeper into the hole. Has he seen any mental health clinicians aside from people at school?
Not really. As I said, he did go once back in the winter, spring last year, but just the one time, and he refused to go any further after that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think was his reason for not wanting to go back?
Well, his strategy so far has just been to, you know, try to avoid this whole situation. And on one level, it's served him well because I think he has enough confidence in his relationship with us that we're not going to, you know, kick him out or do anything draconian or what have you.
Yes, but at another level, this is no life.
No, it's not. And
right.
we keep trying to tell him, you know, it doesn't have to be like this. You know, you could, you know, at least try something else. If, you know, if it doesn't work out, you know, you can always, you know, go back to the local school. I mean, it's
right.
It's not like, you know, and we've encouraged him to do that. We are not remotely saying to him, you have to go to the school, you have to smarten up, and you know, have to start performing to your ability. We're bending over backwards to try and,
You
know, convince him that, you know, if he will be just a little bit flexible, he might find that things would improve.
Yep. You know, the thing that is most concerning here, I mean, I there's a lot of things to be concerned about here, so I totally understand why you're very worried about him. The thing that concerns me most in terms of trying to do something about it is that we don't know enough about it to do something about it. So I'm sure that there are great alternatives for him, but we wouldn't know if those alternatives would be a good match for what he actually needs unless there was some way to gather the information from him about what was going wrong and about where his head is at these days. And it sounds like we know that the folks at school have come up empty, but we really don't know much about how they've tried to approach him about it. The little snippet you've given me, which is that it's conceivable, although we're not sure, that he's being viewed as a kid who just needs to learn his lesson the hard way. Sometimes people who feel that a kid just needs to learn his lesson the hard way approach the kid in a way that is not conducive to getting the kid to talk. And so I'm not, obviously, I've never met your son, don't know him. But the reality is we need to find some way to have him talking to somebody, even a little, so that there's enough information about what's going on in his head, what's getting in his way, where his head's at right now, to then begin formulating what he needs in terms of help. But without that information, it's extremely hard to know what he needs and what that help would look like. So I guess that might be the best I can do for you today, just because we are lacking so much information. There are many, many things that could be going on with your son. He kids who stay up all night, wake up late. Sometimes that's mood. Sometimes that's just hopelessness. I'd be less inclined to go with the primary theory being that he knows that you guys won't give him the boot because, well, although it's nice that you won't give him the boot, the life he's leading now is not something that, well, maybe it is. You know, we'd have to hear this from him as well. But even if he said to us, you know, I'm cool with my life the way it is now, there's still something getting in the way of him having a life that is different from the life that he has now. But because we're lacking so much information, very hard for us to get our bearings on exactly what he might need. So the best I can do is encourage you perhaps to see if you can get him in to see somebody who he would talk to, which I know you've tried, and I know he's not going to be enthusiastic about. I know that you all have tried really hard to talk to him. Nothing against trying again. And if you want to send me a message through the Lives in the Balance website, there's a contact form on there, letting me know where you are. It's conceivable that I might know somebody in the area who approaches things in the collaborative problem-solving way. And we can see if we can get the information we need from your son to try to formulate what kind of help he needs. But that might be as far as I can take you today. I wish I could take you further.
Yeah, well, it's been a problem that's been years in the making, so needless to say, I didn't expect it would be solved through one phone call.
We need information from your son about what's going on, however we can get that information, whether that's a clinician or you and your husband or a family friend, somebody who he gives a little bit of information to about what's going on with him and what's getting in his way, so the discussion about what we can do next can begin. But as we always find, if we don't know what's getting in a kid's way, if we don't know what's going on with the kid, almost impossible to formulate a plan for what we're going to do instead.
Well, I think he quite genuinely doesn't know either. You know, I think he feels pretty overwhelmed. And
even if we heard that from him, I feel overwhelmed, I don't know where to start, I'm in a hole, and I don't know how to get out. That's the beginning of somebody helping him clarify what it is like being in the hole, what's getting in his way, in even more specific terms, so that we have a better sense about what he needs from us. But so overwhelmed is a good beginning, if he were to say that, but it's only the beginning. It's just scratching the surface on us fully understanding why, at the moment, life isn't working for him. So do send me a message, if you want to, through the Lives in the Balance website, and I'll see if I know anybody in your area. And you're always welcome to call into the program, and if there are creative ways that we can come up with to see if we can extract that information from your son so that we can know what we're dealing with, I'm happy to help out.
I just one more quick question. I know you're not big on sort of unilateral approaches. Like, presumably he would have to do this willingly. It wouldn't be a, if you don't go and see a psychologist, we're going to take away your PlayStation or something like that.
I think you can use leverage in ways other than being unilateral and make it happen. So if you're asking me, would I be unilateral? Am I allergic to being unilateral completely? No. Do I ever find it to be necessary? Generally not. I think that you and your husband can use your leverage in ways that aren't unilateral to, and use your concern in ways that aren't unilateral to see if you can make something happen without having to be unilateral about it. Would I be allergic to being unilateral about it? No. I don't know enough about your situation to know if I would give you that advice at this point, though. I wish you the best of luck. I thank you for calling, and I wish I could be more helpful. It's just that we don't have enough information for me to actually take you further than this today.
Okay, thanks very much.
Good luck to you.
Bye.
Pretty hard, especially when we don't have enough information to go on, and there are definitely kids who aren't giving us enough information to go on. Maybe a talented clinician can help us get the information we're looking for. Hard to say. But let's move on to another call. Area code 902. You are on the air. How are you today? Area code 902. Did you want to ask a question? Maybe not. Let's turn to some email. Then maybe we'll give area code 902 another shot at this if they're still on the line when that happens. Here's a email. I think this may be a response to an earlier program that we did. Dr. Green, yes, kids do have legitimate concerns. But with young kids, four-year-olds, not all their concerns are legitimate. For example, refusing to go to the toilet before bedtime every night and being able to make it part of our bedtime routine is not legitimate. Also, four-year-olds are not articulate enough to express what is their concern really, which makes the drilling very challenging. Any tips about that? Well, what I'm reading through the lines on your email, it's not that hard to read through the lines on this one, is that we want him to go to the toilet before bedtime. And we want that to be part of our bedtime routine. And he's not going along with the plan. I think that's the unsolved problem. But that's not a concern. That's just the unsolved problem. Difficulty going along with the bedtime routine of going to the toilet before bedtime. That's an unsolved problem. We don't know what his concerns are yet. I'm trying to think to myself of what would concern him about going to the bathroom before bedtime. And I'm having trouble coming up with anything. But if he didn't have a concern about going to the bathroom before bedtime, he'd be going to the bathroom before bedtime. So there's a concern there somewhere. I just don't know what it is. The unsolved problem is he's having difficulty going to the toilet before bedtime. Why he's having that problem is the concern. And I think it's probably legitimate. But I don't have to add probably. I think it's legitimate. I just don't know what it is. Now to the other part. He's having trouble letting us know. And I'm not sure that's because he's four. I have 17-year-olds who have difficulty letting us know. The mom who just called has a 16-year-old, almost 17-year-old, who's having trouble letting her know. A chronological age typically isn't the issue. So now I want to get a better fix on why your son is having trouble letting you know. There's plenty of four-year-olds, most in fact, who are articulate enough to express what their concern is. It tends not to be a matter of being articulate. He may not know. He may not have the communication wherewithal to let you know. My vibe on the email, and it's only two lines, so I might have the wrong vibe here, is that because we're not viewing his concern that we don't know what it is as legitimate, and because we're saying that it's not legitimate, I wonder if the fact that he's having difficulty going to the toilet before bedtime is being dealt with plan A, and plan A is a conversation stopper, whether he's 4 or 44, in which case I can't tell if it's because he's not articulate enough, which would not be a 4-year-old issue, or because he's having trouble knowing or saying, or because we're not using plan B in the first place on this unsolved problem. So food for thought there for our emailer. Beyond that, I don't necessarily have a good enough understanding of what's going on to weigh in. We do have another very current email, but I'm going to go back to our caller from area code 902 and take another chance here. Area code 902, are you with us here?
Hello?
Hey, you're there.
Hi, I'm here. I was here before, sorry.
No worries. What's on your mind today?
Oh, too much to fit into 10 minutes, but...
Sorry about that.
No, goodness, no. I had sent you an email last week, a ridiculously lengthy email, about my son, 13 years old. The last caller really, really put a scare into me, because my son is what she was describing at 12 or 13 in a lot of ways. He's disengaged with school. He's home this week. We got to a point last week where we just couldn't keep having these big explosions every morning before school, refusing to go to school, refusing to do school work. Homework's always been an issue to get him to sit down and engage in homework. So we've taken plan C for the week and said we're not going to force him to go to school, trying to get him to do some homework here at home. Whenever he knows it's homework time, he tends to get really agitated and a lot of kind of avoiding behavior. Basically, what we've resorted to at the moment is we are not expecting anything of him, and for the last 5 days we haven't had explosions.
And so that, let me translate that into the language of cloud or problem solving. You're plan seeing everything for the purpose of, and I'm putting words in your mouth, stabilizing your situation so you have a better sense of what it is exactly that you're dealing with.
Yes, exactly.
Now, what we know is that you can't do that forever.
No.
So I love stabilizing things, but I especially love stabilizing things by removing expectations if it's in the service of getting a better handle on what we're dealing with in the first place.
Yeah. And that's exactly what we're hoping to do. Is it got to a point where he was physically lashing out at me on a daily basis, destroying property, swearing.
In your efforts to get him to go to school?
To go to school, to go to bed, to brush his teeth, to pick up his clothes, to get off his computer.
So you name it.
You name it. And
but I mean, you've got a nice list of unsolved problems there, but it sounds like all of them were setting it, had the potential to set in motion significant challenging episodes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We've just started working with a new psychologist. He does see a psychiatrist. He is on ADHD medication.
Okay.
He recently was also put on antidepressants for depression and anxiety. He has a lot of that.
Okay.
I think he has a lot of insight into what's going on with him. Like, he talks about having anxiety. He talks about having difficulty with his peer interactions. Last week we got down to, we were talking about having attitude at home, having attitude at school. He's really got a lot of attitude at school now, refusing to talk to the teachers, leaving the classroom whenever he feels like it. And he said to me that he basically figured out that any situation that he fears or he doesn't think he can handle, he has learned that he can successfully avoid it by being as belligerent and rude as possible, because then they just make him leave.
Well, and I hear that a lot, and I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that if there wasn't the unsolved problem there in the first place, that he's trying to solve by avoiding, but avoiding doesn't solve anything.
Right.
Then he wouldn't have to become belligerent so as to ensure that the avoidance was going to hold for him. So I know that, yes, while it may be the case that he's avoiding, and that if people try to force him not to avoid, he'll get upset. That's not an uncommon pattern in the collaborative problem-solving territories. It's just that we don't want to make that the focal point. Avoiding isn't the focal point.
Right.
What he's doing so as to make sure that he can avoid isn't the focal point. What he's avoiding is the unsolved problem. Once it's solved, he would have no reason to avoid it anymore and no reason to get upset so as to ensure that he could avoid it anymore. So I often find, this is not specific to you, just in general, that oftentimes people focus way, way too much on the avoiding part, like it's a bad word, when in fact we all avoid, we all escape, we all try to get what we want. So in that respect, kids who avoid are no different than the rest of us. What he's avoiding, and in the case of challenging kids, yeah, it'll get ugly with a challenging kid, because we're trying to say to them, well, you can't avoid, and we're going to try to make sure that you don't avoid. But I think all of that is what happens after the unsolved problem pops up. If we solve the problem, he doesn't have to avoid it anymore, and it doesn't have to get ugly so he continues avoiding anymore. It's solved. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
So he might be saying that, but that's him and whoever he's talking to, focusing on what happens because the unsolved problem isn't solved yet. The focus needs to be on the unsolved problem, not what he does because the unsolved problem still isn't solved.
Right. Right. And I guess I feel like we've, I mean, this has been him in one way or another from birth, from an infant. It just, you know, the lagging skills and, you know, the challenges, he just expresses himself differently as he gets older. But
yes,
I really do see
more colorful.
Yeah, but he's the exact same. It's been the same issues. Nothing has ever come up brand new, like, oh, my God, where did this come from? This has been him from day one.
All right, him day one, presumably you're talking about temperament there, yes?
I'm talking about temperament, yeah, absolutely.
Because the unsolved problems that, so basically we would say that he has kind of, if I was to put it in clinical terms, he's got the same temperament now that he has all along, yes?
Yes, yes.
What may have changed over time, because the demands being placed upon him change over time,
mm-hmm.
is the unsolved problems that are byproducts of his difficult temperament presumably do change because the demands being placed upon him change and they get harder.
Mm-hmm.
So your list of unsolved problems is probably evolving. And what I think I hear you saying is your difficult temperament son has a large pile of unsolved problems, most of which are still unsolved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And many of them occur in the school environment, and on those, just like, quite frankly, the mom who called before you,
mm-hmm.
we may need to collaborate with the school to not only figure out, and you might have already, it sounds like maybe you have, but we might need to, might need to collaborate with the school to figure out what the unsolved problems are in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and we might need to collaborate with them on solving them. If he's having trouble with kids at school,
mm-hmm.
You at home may not be well equipped to help him in the best way possible. You can coach him along, you can encourage him, you can try to give him advice on what to do, but you're going to need help from the folks at school to deal with that.
And I don't find that the principal is very empathetic and understanding. I find the teachers this year, he's in grade 8, have come to the conclusion that he's really not worth bothering with. And so I'm...
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, they're really putting up brick walls, and I'm constantly trying to talk to them and the principal. He's got some resources in place. He has an IEP in place. When I just reviewed his IEP, part of it is around organizational skills, and it's for math mm-hmm. as well. He hasn't been seeing the resource teacher. And all the things, I'm looking differently now that I've been introduced to you by this new psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the IEP for his organizational skills, it's basically listing everything he struggles with, and the expectation is that he does it. There's nothing.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, he will remember to bring his books to class. Has that been met or not? Well, no, of course it hasn't. I'm looking at that going, that's no IEP. There's nothing in there for him to, you know, to assist him, right?
Right. So I hope, because we're about to run out of time, which I'm sorry about, I hope that your new psychologist, if he introduced you to collaborative problem solving, of course I'm going to think that's fantastic. I'm going to think that person's wearing the right lenses. So, you know, I'm positive about that. I'm also hoping that that he will be able to get information out of your son that helps us, that informs the unsolved problems that he's having.
Mm-hmm.
That he'll be able to teach everybody, including the folks at school, how to solve those problems collaboratively.
Mm-hmm.
And you are welcome to call into the program next time we're on if you want to continue the conversation.
Okay. Thank you so
Thanks for calling.
Much. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.
And by the way, along those lines, there is no program next week because I'll be out of town, and no program the following week because it's right around the Christmas holiday. I hope all of you have a pleasant holiday, and I look forward to being with you again in January when we start this up again. Take care. Talk to you soon.